Lecture 31, The River War and Confederate Commerce Raiders.
This lecture continues our look at the naval side of the war. Last time we assessed the relative strengths and weaknesses of each side's navy and then looked at the Union blockade. Now we'll move inland to see how the United States Navy performed as it supported military operations along the southern rivers. And then we'll turn to the Confederacy's use of privateers and commerce raiders in an attempt to disrupt northern maritime trade and force the North to shift vessels from blockading duty to an effort to capture these southern raiders. Let's begin with Union efforts to build a navy for use in the Western theater. We've seen before that the Western Confederacy was vulnerable along three waterborne routes. The Mississippi plunged all the way through the Confederacy, the Tennessee River dropped down through Tennessee, and the Cumberland also flowed out of Tennessee toward the Ohio. So there are three ways for the North to use rivers. And the United States realized early on that they would need a naval flotilla to operate on these rivers in support of their military operations. The South, as we've seen, built fortifications at many points along these rivers, at Belmont and Memphis, Vicksburg, Port Hudson, and elsewhere on the Mississippi. And of course, Fort Henry on the Tennessee River and Fort Donelson on the Cumberland. Union leaders envisioned strikes down especially the Mississippi early on with Winfield Scott's Anaconda campaign. But early in planning on the United States side, it was obvious that both the Tennessee and the Cumberland also would figure prominently. The question was, what kinds of vessels do we need to operate in this theater? And the answer was that we need vessels that will mount guns heavy enough to challenge the big artillery in the Confederate forts that they'd be facing, but also vessels that were shallow enough in draft that they could navigate in 10 feet or less of water. The first three gunboats built for the West were put together under the supervision of naval officers from Washington, and they were called timberclads. The Lexington, the Tyler, and the Conestoga. They were converted flat-bottom sidewheelers, and they were commissioned in June 1861. They would be useful, but the North knew that they wouldn't hold up against the most powerful Confederate batteries. You needed to have more substantial vessels. You needed ironclads. And the key man in the ironclad building program on the Western rivers was a civilian named James B. Eads. He was a salvage contractor, known to be a hard-driving taskmaster. He was a person whose great achievement would be a group of seven ironclads that he would build early in the war, vessels that would see extensive service along these Western rivers. They were all virtually identical in size and characteristics. They were designed by a man named Samuel Pook. They were about 175 feet long. They had slanted sides that looked very much like the sides of the Confederate ironclad Virginia. They were armed with 13 guns and powered by high compression steam engines, a pair on each vessel, that could achieve 5 miles per hour upstream on the rivers and 9 miles per hour downstream. Eads had 4,000 men working on these vessels, and they worked in some cases virtually around the clock. Beginning construction in August of 61, Eads was able to have the first vessel, the St. Louis, completed in less than 60 days. By January 1862, all seven of the ships were afloat, and they soon became the backbone of the Western River Fleet. They were named after Western River ports: the St. Louis, the Louisville, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Cairo, Carondelet, and Mound City. The men who first saw them thought they were odd in appearance because they weren't used to vessels that looked like this. One midshipman who served on them said that they were, quote, of the mud turtle school of architecture, with just a dash of polywog treatment by way of relief. But this man also added that they, quote, struck terror into every guilty soul as they floated down the rebel rivers. They were nicknamed Pook's Turtles by the Union sailors who served on them. These crews were a mixture of saltwater sailors from the East, some rivermen who had worked on the Western rivers before the war, a few freshwater men from the Great Lakes, and just a leavening of regular Navy men scattered throughout the cruise.